Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we're going to be taking a deep dive into something I know a lot of you are really passionate about, making health psychology research more inclusive and anti-racist. I mean, it's really about time we tackle those racial health disparities head on, right?
Absolutely.
So to guide us today, we have this really fascinating article. It's from 2021, published in the American Psychologist Journal, and it's called Addressing Racial Equity and Health Psychology Research, an Application of the Multicultural Orientation Framework. Quite a mouthful.
Yeah.
But don't worry, we'll break it all down for you.
It's a good one. This article really cuts to the chase. The authors, Tricia L. Raquet and her colleagues, they argue, and I think pretty convincingly, that the way we often do health psychology research, you know, focusing a lot on biological stuff and using what they call positivist methods, well, it might be missing some really big pieces of the puzzle when it comes to understanding, you know, racial health disparities.
Okay, now you've got me intrigued, but you know me, I always need things explained clearly. So for those of us who aren't scientists or researchers, can you break down what these positivist methods are and why they might not be the best way to understand something as complex as, you know, why different racial groups experience such different health outcomes?
Sure. So imagine you're trying to understand poverty in a big city. A positivist approach would be like only looking at people's income. Like, how much money does each person make?
Right.
You'd get some data, but would you really understand what's causing poverty? All those complicated social and economic and historical factors? Probably not. You'd be missing the big picture.
Right, the context.
Exactly. And that's what these authors are saying happens a lot in health psychology research. We focus on, like, individual factors, and we kind of miss how all these social and cultural forces impact health, especially when we're trying to understand things like racial disparities in health.
So it's like focusing on the symptoms without really getting at the root causes, we're missing all the social and cultural stuff that plays a huge role in people's health.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. So this article, it's not just pointing out the problems, it's offering a solution, right?
Right. They're pushing for what they call a socio-structural approach to research, one that actually takes all those social and cultural things into account.
Okay, I like where this is going. So how do they propose we actually do that?
Well, they introduced this framework called the Multicultural Orientation Framework, MCO for short.
Okay, MCO. Sounds kind of mysterious. What's the secret to this framework?
Not so mysterious once you break it down. It's got three main parts: cultural humility, cultural opportunities, and cultural comfort. Let's start with cultural humility. It's not about researchers becoming experts in every culture out there.
Right.
It's more about coming to research with a humble attitude, you know, recognizing that you don't have all the answers and that the people you're studying, their experiences and perspectives are incredibly valuable.
It's about respecting the people you're working with, not just treating them as research subjects.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's cultural humility. What about cultural opportunities? What does that even mean in the context of research?
It's about recognizing that every single part of the research process is a chance to learn from different cultures and bring those perspectives in. Like how you design the study, the type of data you collect, even how you share your findings later on, every step of the way.
So it's kind of like constantly being open to new ideas and ways of doing things instead of just sticking to, you know, the traditional methods.
Right.
I see. And then there's cultural comfort. What's that all about?
This one is it's about being willing to talk openly and honestly about race and culture, even if it's a bit uncomfortable sometimes.
It can be a tough conversation to have.
It can be. But it's so important because we all have biases, right? And those biases can affect the way we do research without even realizing it. So cultural comfort is about being aware of that and being willing to learn and grow.
You know, one thing that really struck me when I was reading this article was how it highlighted the whole historical context of medical racism. It's not just about biases we might have today. It's about understanding this long history of mistreatment and exploitation that has led to, you know, a lot of mistrust of research, especially in communities of color.
Absolutely. The article talks about the Tuskegee syphilis study as a really powerful example.
Right, where those black men with syphilis were denied treatment for decades.
It's just a horrible example of how research can be used to hurt people instead of helping them. And it's had lasting consequences. You know, a lot of people in communities of color still remember those injustices, and it affects how they view research today.
It's a reminder that we have to be so careful and thoughtful in how we approach research, especially when we're working with communities that have been marginalized or mistreated in the past. So with that in mind, how does the MCO framework, you know, address this issue of mistrust?
Well, for one thing, it starts by acknowledging that mistrust. Like just saying, hey, we know there's a reason why you might not trust researchers, and we get it. It encourages researchers to be really transparent about what they're doing, to be in front about the risks and benefits of participating in research, and most importantly, to really listen to the community's concerns and take them seriously.
So it's about building relationships, not just collecting data.
Exactly. It's about showing the community that you're not just there to extract information, you're there to work with them in a way that's respectful and beneficial.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's get down to brass tacks here. How does this actually play out in real life? The article uses this example of perinatal health disparities for Black women, which is a pretty stark example of the inequities we're talking about, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the statistics are pretty shocking. The article mentions that Black women in the U.S. are like 4 to 5 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications than white women.
It's a huge disparity. What are the usual explanations for this?
Usually, researchers have focused on things like socioeconomic status, access to healthcare, education level.
Uh-huh.
And while those things definitely matter, they don't tell the whole story. They don't fully explain why these disparities are so large.
So what's missing in the picture?
The article points to something called the weathering hypothesis.
Okay, weathering hypothesis sounds kind of ominous. What's that all about?
It's the idea that the constant stress of experiencing racism and discrimination, all those microaggressions, feeling like you have to be on guard all the time, worry about your safety, all that takes a toll on your body. Like your body is constantly being weathered by a storm.
Right.
And over time, that stress builds up and it leads to something called allostatic load.
Allostatic load. So basically, the wear and tear on your body from chronic stress.
Exactly. And for Black women, this weathering process can start really early in life and it can go on for years, even decades.
Wow. So even if Black women have, you know, good health care and education, they're still facing this like kind of lying burden of stress that's impacting their health.
That's the idea. The weathering hypothesis helps explain why we see these disparities, even when we account for things like income and education. It's really powerful. It shows why we need to take those social and cultural factors seriously in research.
So we've got a well-designed study. We're collecting data in a thoughtful and culturally sensitive way. What happens next? How do researchers share their findings in a way that's both informative and actually useful to the community?
This is where data dissemination comes in, and MCO emphasizes going beyond just publishing in academic journals, which often aren't accessible to the wider community. It's about sharing findings in ways that are understandable and relevant to the community, perhaps through presentations at community centers, articles in local newspapers or newsletters, or even videos or podcasts shared on social media.
It's about making the research accessible to the people who participated in it and to the wider community. And it's about using those findings to advocate for change, whether that's changes in healthcare policies, community resources, or even broader social policies.
Precisely. MCO encourages researchers to see themselves not just as data collectors, but as advocates for social justice. It's about using research to make a real difference in the world.
That's a powerful idea, and it brings us back to the importance of structural change. If we really want to see more equitable and impactful research, it can't just be about individual researchers doing the right thing. It requires institutions to step up and support this kind of work.
You're absolutely right. We need universities and funding agencies to prioritize research that addresses health disparities and to create a culture that values community engagement and social justice as much as it values traditional measures of academic success.
This MCO framework really is a call to action.
I agree. It's a challenge to rethink the way we do research, but it's a necessary challenge if we want to create a more just and equitable world. And it's not just about researchers, it's about all of us demanding better, more responsible, and more impactful research.
It's easy to get overwhelmed by all of this, you know, the health disparities, the systemic racism, the historical trauma. But this MCO framework, it kind of feels like a breath of fresh air. Like, okay, here are some actual tools we can use to make things better.
I agree. What's so powerful about the MCO is that it's not just some theory, it's like a call to action. It's about researchers taking responsibility, acknowledging their own biases, and really working to change the way research is done.
Yeah, it's about shifting from just studying communities to actually partnering with them to create change together.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that research can be a tool for liberation, not just for collecting data.
I like that. So as we keep unpacking this MCO framework, I'm curious, how can it be applied beyond just perinatal health? Like, let's say a researcher is interested in studying the impact of stress on cardiovascular health in a predominantly Latinx community. How could they use those MCO principles in their research?
Okay, great example. So using the MCO framework, that researcher would start by really looking inward, like examining their own biases and assumptions about stress, cardiovascular health, and the Latinx community. They'd also probably consult with colleagues, especially those from the Latinx community, to get their insights.
So they wouldn't just rely on their own limited knowledge.
Exactly. And building those strong relationships with community partners would be really crucial. They'd want to connect with those partners in the Latinx community to, like, actually co-create the research questions. You know, figure out together what's most relevant to the community.
Making sure the research is a collaborative effort, not something imposed from the outside.
Absolutely. It's about partnership, shared decision-making, and making sure the community's voice is central to the research.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, let's talk about data collection. How would the researcher make sure their methods are culturally appropriate and respectful in this context?
Well, first, they need to think carefully about the types of data they're collecting. If they're collecting biological data, like blood pressure readings or saliva samples, they need to be really sensitive to any cultural beliefs or concerns about those procedures.
Right, like some cultures might have different beliefs about the body or blood, or they might have had negative experiences with medical procedures in the past.
Precisely. So the researcher would need to be aware of those beliefs and address them thoughtfully during the informed consent process. They'd also want to consider the language used in these study materials, making sure everything is translated accurately and appropriately.
And it's not just about literal translation, right? It's about making sure the concepts and language are actually meaningful and relevant to the community.
Yeah, you got it. They might even need to adapt existing measures or create new ones that are specifically tailored to the cultural context. And like we've discussed, incorporating qualitative data like interviews or focus groups would be really important for capturing the richness of people's experiences.
So let's say the researcher has all this data now. How do they share those findings in a way that's informative and impactful for the community?
Again, it's about going beyond just academic journals. They might want to share their findings directly with the community, like through presentations at community centers, maybe articles in local newspapers, or even videos or podcasts shared on social media.
It's about making the research accessible to everyone involved, and also about using those findings to actually advocate for change, whether that's in healthcare policies or community resources or even broader social policies.
Exactly. MCO encourages researchers to think of themselves as not just data collectors, but as advocates for social justice.
I love that.
It's about using research to make a real difference.
This ties back to what we were talking about before, the need for structural change within institutions. If we want to see more equitable research, we need universities and funding agencies to support and reward this kind of work.
Definitely. We need universities to actually incentivize community-engaged research, prioritize funding for projects that address health disparities, you know, and create a culture that really values social justice and equity.
This MCO framework, it really is a call to action, not just for researchers, but for like everyone involved in research. It's challenging, but it's definitely necessary if we want a more just and equitable world. It's really inspiring to see how this framework can apply to all these different research areas.
Yeah, the principles behind MCO are pretty universal. It doesn't matter if you're studying asthma or cardiovascular health or something else. Those core values, you know, cultural humility, opportunity, and comfort, they're always important.
And it's not just about, like, checking boxes or following rules, right?
Right. It's got to be a deeper change, like recognizing those power dynamics that exist in research and being aware of your own biases and approaching communities as partners, not just subjects.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into MCO, what's the one thing you really hope our listeners will take away from all this?
I hope they remember that racial equity in research isn't just about, you know, being nice or politically correct. It's about doing good science. When we ignore all those social and cultural things that impact health, our research is just incomplete.
It's like you're missing half the story.
Exactly. And it can even be harmful if it leads to the wrong conclusions. So by using frameworks like MCO, we can make research more inclusive, more accurate, and ultimately more effective.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's about recognizing that good science and social justice, they actually go together.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been such a thought-provoking conversation. I feel like I have a whole new understanding of research and its potential.
Me too. And I really hope our listeners feel empowered to ask questions about the research they see and to demand more from the people who are doing it.
We all have a part to play in making research a force for good, you know, something that can create a healthier and more just world for everyone.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it's given you some food for thought and maybe even inspired you to get involved. Until next time.
Gonna say.
What do you